This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Weathers in.
Wow, that was a game. The men may have produced, the Maryland men that is, the best finish to a game in either of the tournaments, the men's and the women's tournament. But last night in College Park, the game of March so far, Maryland outlasted Alabama in double overtime, 111-108. It was the second highest scoring NCAA tournament game of all time. On the other end, as in the Crimson Tide end, Sarah Ashley Barker scored 45 points, Denton. 45. She was unstoppable. She was 17 of 25 from the floor. And that was 5 points short of the all-time individual scoring mark in NCAA tournament play. If the game had gone to a third overtime, she probably would have set the mark. Now, she also turned it over 11 times in the game. Maryland off to the Sweet 16. This is the first time, and this is surprising to me, and maybe it shouldn't be, this is the first time during Brenda Freeze's run at Maryland, where the Maryland men and the Maryland women have both been in the Sweet 16 at the same time. You know, she arrived at Maryland the year after Maryland won the national championship on the men's side. And then a few years later in 2006, she snagged an NCAA title in College Park. What a run, though, Brenda Freeze has had. She's going to join us in 20 minutes on the show. 23rd year at Maryland, and she's in the Sweet 16 for the 12th time. It would have been the 13th time, more likely than not, if not for COVID, because the Terps were going to be a very high seed in 2020 in the tournament. They get South Carolina. They get Dawn Staley and South Carolina next on Friday in the Sweet 16. Hell of a game. I was watching this game. They fouled this Ashley Barker at the end of the first overtime on a three-point attempt, up three, and she knocked down all three free throws to extend the game. There were a couple of moments in which I thought Maryland had the game wrapped up, but Bama led by 17 in the third quarter of the game. Hell of a basketball game last night. So I wanted to read something that I got yesterday, and we didn't have time to read it yesterday, and this is off the beaten path sports-wise. It comes from Will. Will writes, "Kevin, I'm a new listener to your show, and I enjoy just about every episode." Well, thank you, Will. "I understand that your focus on DC is on DC area sports, especially the Skins, Maryland basketball, etc. I grew up in wrestling in Northern Virginia, and I felt like this weekend's NCAA championship deserved mention, even though it's not about the DC area or football or basketball. I did want to follow up with a question at the end that I think is an interesting question," but he writes, "Wyatt Hendrickson from Oklahoma State at 285 pounds upset Gable Stevenson from Minnesota for the NCAA Heavyweight Championship. Many in the wrestling community believe that this is the greatest upset in NCAA history. Wyatt Hendrickson beating Gable Stevenson might be the greatest upset in NCAA wrestling history. Stevenson was practically untouchable, an Olympic gold medalist in the 2020 Tokyo Games, multiple-time NCAA champion, and widely considered one of the most dominant heavyweights of all time. Hendrickson, while incredibly talented, wasn't expected to dethrone someone of Stevenson's caliber, especially after Gable came out of retirement with all of the hype surrounding him. The fact that Hendrickson not only held his ground but won against someone many saw as unbeatable completely flipped the script. It wasn't just an upset. It was a seismic moment that will be talked about for years to come. Anyways, I had to bring it up and see what you think is the greatest NCAA upset of all time. I'm guessing none on your list will include beating an Olympic gold medalist in wrestling. Ha ha. Cheers, Will. You know, I actually on Saturday saw the video of the end of this. It went viral. Did you see it, Denton?
Of course I did. Gable Stevenson was at one point signed to the WWE, one of your favorite entities.
Okay. I've never heard of either name. Okay. I know Trey Hendrickson. I certainly know of a few Stevensons over the years, but I was unfamiliar with either one of these two gentlemen. But the video went viral on social media over the weekend, and it was an exciting call. It was a dramatic call. And I did, you know, a tiny bit of research. Will provided much more to see the significance of what I was watching and understood that. And I actually made a note to myself, because I put a lot of notes into my phone as I'm just walking around or watching things or hearing things, that this would be a good what do you got at some point. And then I got this note from Will. Will, I could never, ever be able to understand other than from what you've described and others have described and written about where this would rank among the all-time NCAA upsets. I know football and basketball, and that's about it. I mean, when it comes to college sports, I am just your typical American sports fan. I watch college football and I watch college basketball. You know, the last couple of years, I've probably watched more women's college basketball than I've ever watched before. Horrible injury last night, Juju Watkins getting injured for USC, tearing her ACL. Crushing moment for the women's tournament for her. By the way, she was hanging out with Jaden Daniels over the weekend, wasn't she, at some game?
Jaden Daniels went to her game.
He went to her first-round game?
He went to her first-round game. He also was present last night at the second-round game.
Oh, he was at the game last night.
He was. They're both from Southern California.
Are they dating? Do they know each other? Are they friends? I don't know anything about the relationship. I thought somebody wrote that they were cousins.
Somebody did write that they were cousins, but there's been nothing that has been proven to back up the idea that they are cousins.
Okay.
I mean, if there is something there, good for them. That's an athletic couple. I'll tell you that. Like, that's two high-level athletes.
Yeah. No doubt. And by the way, it does help when the husband and the wife are both athletes. The kids are typically in pretty good shape. Anyway, back to the wrestling thing. And that was a blow to the tournament and to Juju Watkins, who was obviously the star of women's basketball this year. So I watched the video. Obviously, people in that sport understand the magnitude of this upset. Like, this was not supposed to happen. No chance. This was Clay over Liston. This was Ollie over George Foreman, who passed away over the weekend. I'll be talking to Tom about that today on my podcast. Tom's a Hall of Fame boxing writer and knew George pretty well over the years. This was, Douglas over Tyson, is essentially what people are saying about this upset. For me, when it comes to college upsets, the greatest college upsets of all time, I start, I think, with NC State beating Houston in the 1983 NCAA tournament final. Although it wasn't the biggest point spread upset by a long shot, Houston was only an 8-point favorite in that final, in part because NC State was a team capable of really slowing the pace, and there was no shot clock, you know, back then. Man, you know, for those of you that don't ever remember college basketball without a shot clock, I don't think we realized it when we were watching it at the time, but it would be absolutely impossible to ever go back. Imagine turning on a basketball game that's majorly hyped, like, I'll give you an example, the 1982 ACC tournament final between number one North Carolina, or number one Virginia, number two North Carolina. Ralph Sampson's Virginia team, North Carolina with Michael Jordan and Sam Perkins and James Worthy. And Dean Smith decides in a game that's like 6-5 in the first half to pull the ball out and hold it for the rest of the half. I'm just going to tell you, Denton, there was something about watching that was dramatic in watching it back then. You could never go back to that. It would be horrible. But they literally held the ball. The score ended up being, I forget what that final score was, 41-40, something like that was the final score. That happened, though, all the time. You know, in Carolina's case, Dean Smith was the master of the four-corner offense and of holding the ball. Phil Ford was one of the great players to ever play in the ACC, but one of the reasons he's considered to be one of the greatest players to ever play in the ACC is he was the master of the four-corner delay offense. Of course, their four-corner offense also became an offense that they scored out of on a lot of occasions. But I would say that NC State over Houston, maybe even more so than Villanova over Georgetown. Many have pointed this out over the years, and I agree with it. That was their third meeting. Villanova had no fear of Georgetown because they were in their conference. They had played them. They knew what to expect. Phi slamma jamma going into that 83 title game was one of the highest flying, most athletic, seemingly unbeatable teams. And really, most people thought that the final had happened on Saturday night in the Final Four when they beat Louisville in the semifinals in an incredible game, one of the great Final Four games of all time. And that it was just, you know, a matter of, you know, a couple of hours, and Guy Lewis, who was the head coach of Houston, along with Clyde Drexler and a very young Hakeem Olajuwon, who at that point was actually called Akeem, A-K-E-E-M, Olajuwon, and Larry Mischel, and that group would wipe the floor with NC State, and it didn't happen. You know, the irony of that game, when you go back and you watch that game, is that NC State didn't slow it down. They went right at Houston, right out of the gate. They went at them, and they had an 8-point halftime lead. It was 33-25, I think, was the halftime score. You know, that's not a high-scoring game, but they went right at Houston, and they had an 8-point lead. The key in that game was Clyde Drexler picking up his fourth foul, Denton, in the first half. They put Clyde Drexler back into the game as NC State took a lead with three fouls, and he got called for a charge, charging into Terry Gannon, yes, the ABC ESPN play-by-play analyst guy over the years for lots of different sports. And, you know, if you ever want to go back and look at that play, Gannon actually bear hugs Clyde Drexler and kind of pulls him to the ground, but they called it an offensive foul. Coaches now don't keep guys in the game in the first half once they pick up their second foul. And Guy Lewis put Clyde Drexler back into the game in the first half with three fouls, and he got his fourth foul in the first half. I would bet you that over the last 30 years of basketball, you can't find an example of somebody having four fouls in the first half of a basketball game, college basketball game. There's no way a coach would have a player in the game with three fouls. I guess it's possible that some deep down off the bench guy comes in for defensive purposes or whatever and gets super aggressive and picks up four fouls and the coach isn't concerned about sitting him and foul trouble for that player, but not a starter. Not a starter, right?
Right. Although we did see in a couple of the conference tournaments, there were some people that kept their guys in with four fouls when they shouldn't have, and they
in the second half.
In the second half, yeah, not the first half, but in the second half.
Yeah, that. But in the, you know, I don't know when it became like the thing to do in college basketball, because I don't think it was the thing to do in the 80s to pull a player with the second foul. It seems to me that the mass majority of college coaches, if one of their starters, one of their key players anyway, gets a second foul in the first half, they pull them. Now, if there's a compelling reason because the game's getting away from them, they'll put them back in maybe, you know, and risk the third foul. But there's no chance. I haven't seen it in decades where a coach has kept a player in the game, a key player in the game in the first half with three fouls.
Let's keep it that way, unless Todd Golden wants to do that on Thursday against Maryland.
Yeah. We'll let him keep a couple of his key players
in. Like, keep Clayton in there if he got a fourth foul in the first half. You know, just get him out of the game early.
Yeah. So yesterday, switching subjects, would you like to add anything else to the all-time college upset conversation?
I mean, I thought it was awesome. I thought the call was great. I am stunned and also a little upset that you spent 8 to 10 minutes on this when I've been trying to get you to talk wrestling for 3 years, but it's fine.
But you're not. This is real wrestling, though.
So is WWE, to an extent, kind of. Wink, wink.
Okay.
I mean, Gable Steveson was signed to WWE, and he decided to come back to Minnesota just to lose. So, you know, he couldn't cut it in the WWE. It just is what it is.
Did you know the significance of this upset?
Yeah. I mean, I know that Gable Steveson's one of the best. I mean, he's an Olympic gold medalist. Yeah. So I knew how good he was, and I had never heard of Wyatt Hendrickson before. So him upsetting, literally didn't matter who it was, anybody upsetting Gable Steveson was going to be a massive deal.
All right. Really cool video and call of it. For those that haven't seen it, just, you know, just search heavyweight college championship wrestling upset. Switching subjects real quickly. First of all, let me just mention Brenda Fries coming up in about 10 minutes. Kevin Willard will join us at 11:25 this morning from San Francisco. The Terps getting ready for their Sweet 16 game Thursday night against Florida. We will certainly talk to Kevin about the game on Sunday against Colorado State and about his future. So 11:25 for Kevin Willard coming up. We've got other people scheduled on the show today as well. John Fanta from Fox will join us at 11. We'll talk tournament with John. And I think we'll have Robbie Hummel, who was on the call for the Terps game Sunday in Seattle, on the show in the 12 o'clock hour. Yesterday was pro day for Cam Ward at Miami. And people were going nuts over Cam Ward's performance. He was slinging it all over the field. The conversation about his leadership on the field, and all of a sudden now it appears as if he is an absolute slam dunk to go number one overall to Tennessee. You know, I don't know why the Titans, if they like Cam Ward, would ever think about trading that pick. They don't have a quarterback. You have to have one. Cam Ward, from my standpoint, we've been talking about Cam Ward all year long. To me, he has been the number one quarterback in this draft, and I don't even think it's been close. And I think there's a chance he'll be a very good NFL quarterback. Like, there's a lot of Jaden in him. You know, I don't want to call anybody a poor man's Jaden Daniels at this point, because that almost implies that Jaden Daniels has established himself as a long-time, you know, great player. But Cam Ward does a lot of what Jaden can do. The one thing I would just say about Cam Ward, I think there's times where he plays almost too casually, too nonchalantly. But, you know, some people said that about Jaden and his running style and when he would take off. And but Cam Ward really does it, and sometimes it gets him in big trouble with big losses and negative plays. But I love his talent, everything he did at the college level last year for sure the skills that he has are translatable in today's NFL. And that's some of the things that we talked about when we talked about Jaden coming out last year. But he apparently had one of the more impressive pro days. I mean, everybody talking about how impressive Cam Ward was. But I had somebody mention something to me, and this was, you know, during the season, and it was not on the show. It was a conversation about Jaden and what the team saw in him, you know, during the offseason that convinced everybody in the building that Jaden was the right guy. And it wasn't, you know, the interview necessarily in Indy, although that was their first face-to-face. It certainly wasn't his pro day. It was the things that really matter. How he played in actual games at LSU. And then what he was in the classroom. So when he was here with all of those other prospects, and they went to Topgolf, and there was all of this, you know, conversation about, you know, did he get enough attention, et cetera, stuff coming from his agent, the whole thing. They wanted to see him in the classroom. How does he process? How does he, you know, learn? These pro days and the Indy Combine, the physical parts of these things are so overrated. This is what, you know, I was told by somebody who, let's just say, is in the evaluation business. And what blew him away about Jaden was the games and then the person inside the classroom. But anyway, Cam Ward, a hell of a day apparently yesterday. Wouldn't you be surprised if Tennessee trades or doesn't take Cam Ward at this point?
I'd be stunned. They literally don't have anybody. They haven't been in any conversations for Russ or Aaron or whoever. It feels like Cam Ward is going number one overall.
I'll tell you what. You know, it was a benefit that the Giants went and beat Indianapolis, remember, late in the season. You know, with Drew Locke at quarterback, because they could have easily been in that position to select Cam Ward, and he could have been in the division. I mean, what do we know? We don't know anything. It's always a crapshoot with these picks, but Cam Ward's got real talent. It'll be interesting to watch him develop, and not much of a problem with him in the AFC, more likely than not in Tennessee. All right. Maryland's women's team is back in the Sweet 16. Brenda Fries has just had an amazing run. She'll join us next.